trade unions. I know that they are already here. Apologies, I have not received any. Honorable Nkwankwa has submitted an apology.
Honorable Manana and Honorable Madopa.
Okay, Honorable Manana from Madopa also won't be able to join us. Any other apologies?
Just to know from our side, there are a few members who are going for provincial briefing from the Division of Revenue. Yeah, some have left today. I think Ayala told me that he's leaving today. So I'm not sure. Yeah.
So we'll take note of that, yes?
Honorable de Blanche is at the high election, so... also said that.
Okay, Honorable de Blanche by election. Okay. Penelani, you have noted those apologies. Okay.
Thank you. Are we going to get a hard copy of the slides, sir?
Yes, we're waiting for copies to be delivered. Do members have soft copies? You have soft copies? Okay. We will start in the meantime, but you will get hard copies as well. We will start with COSATU. This they have been here early. Let me just your presentation. Oh, okay. But generally what they have will be okay. If there's nothing else, let's allow COSATU to present. You'll introduce your team if you have a team with you.
Okay, good morning, Chairperson. Thanks very much. Good morning to members and colleagues, and comrades, guests. Yes, thanks for allowing COSATU to add its two cents of thought around the medium-term budget statements. My name is Matthew. My surname is Parks. I'm from COSATU's parliamentary office. And I think we'd also want to state, Chairperson, that we're always available to assist the committee or any of the members on any issues they might want to hear COSATU or its affiliates' perspectives on. I think, Chair, even if the committee is to do oversight visits, we'd always be happy to link you up to our relevant affiliates in the provinces, etc., or in the departments. I think, Chair, in terms of the budget statements and the appropriations, Look, I think we must expect some frustrations about how the processes normally unfold, because they have hearings in Parliament once a year. Everybody adds their viewpoints, and then it's recorded in reports. But we don't often see that those views being translated into what happens in the budget itself. I think we are sensitive that Parliament does have the legislative powers to amend budgets, but of course we wouldn't want to do that recklessly, like in the United States, where you have almost a dysfunctional system because their Congress holds government to ransom around parliamentary budget changes. But I think, Chair, our point is that there must be better ways to find how can we include society's perspectives around key budgetary issues. We've had similar frustrations at NEDLAC, where the Minister of Finance, Comrade Lenny, would come twice a year, give an input on the budget, and then we'll make our comments and off we would go. But then it kind of remains at that. I think, Chair, that sorry, my apologies. Maybe we must find ways that even outside of the normal budget cycles of February and October, to find time to sit together, whether through the committee or through NEDLAC, with key stakeholders and say, what are the kind of issues we would like to see in next year's budget, for example? I think more so, Chair, that given the pressing demands that students have raised correctly around free tertiary education, around the kind of fiscal constraints government is facing, how can we assist each other to prioritize? But I think, Chair, we do appreciate the committee's efforts to bring more life and more influence and power to Parliament in this regard. I think, Chair, look, we must be frank and acknowledge the huge pressures government is facing. It's not an easy economic climate locally or globally. I think we must say, given the constraints, government on the whole has done quite a good job trying to manage the balance. As COSATU, we are always influenced by three issues, key issues. One is the 34% unemployment crisis, us being easily the most unequal society in the world and having massive poverty levels. I think, Chair, we really cannot afford to ignore those things. We really want to see more effort from government to creating jobs, because if we don't put a sense of urgency into it, one day it'll explode. We might not expect that you can't diarize explosions. Nobody expected the students to uprise the way they did. And then we were all caught, all of us, including COSATU, in a corner around it. But of course, I think, look, we are sensitive to the global climate and to the declining tax revenues. But equally, we're frustrated that we've had year after year of essentially jobless economic growth. I think we do appreciate government's efforts to expand infrastructure significantly as a way of kickstarting the economy. But we're equally concerned that we're not winning the fight against corruption. There are too many stories on a daily basis in the press, and I think, Chair, we can be frank that those really are the tip of the iceberg too often. I think we really want a sense of urgency amongst all our departments and municipalities in our provinces to deal with this monster before it swallows us. I think, Chair, we do recognize that Treasury, for example, has made some significant efforts to try to curb wasteful expenditure, curb corruption, but I see too many municipalities blatantly ignoring that. And I think, Chair, we would be playing with fire if we really ignored the public's frustrations. You know, we've had the university students demanding 0% increase in the fees correctly, but then we see yesterday the CEO of Armscore explaining in very nice bureaucratic language why there's a need for a presidential plane. We see the media articles talking about 4 billion, 4.5 billion, whatever. And politically, we can't afford to put ourselves into a corner that we are not seen to be sensitive to public concerns. Yes, there could be, for example, a need for a presidential jet. One can explain that. But I don't know how, in English, I would ever explain to someone staying in Malawi camp, squatter camp next to the airport, the need for a presidential jet right now in the current climate. So I think, Chair, the point is around prioritization. I think lastly on this kind of political outlook, Chair, I think our key frustration as COSATU is that we felt this was really a business as usual budget, as opposed to one we felt would have more radical economic interventions in the economy to really stimulate job growth. Of course, we are sensitive to the huge pressures Treasury is on, not to discount those. Chair, I think for us, again, we're deeply concerned that, and again, we're not blind to the declining fiscal revenues, and a hell of a massive pressure to government to say things, but are worried that we are moving too fast towards reducing expenditure too quickly in the next 3 years. And first it becomes an approach of austerity. At the same time, our economy really does need extra jolts and stimulation. We feel that in some departments there is in fact a cut in the expenditure. Actually, I think maybe one could say in a political summary, there's basically two economic approaches that we've seen globally. On the one hand, we've seen the EU cutting back expenditure and having jobless growth. On the other hand, we've seen the United States and China driving economic growth through state expenditure, and we've seen, as a consequence, unemployment falling massively there. Chair, I think there's always much said about the public wage bill. I think as COSATU, representing the majority of public servants, we really feel that the focus is placed on the wrong persons. It seems the focus is one of demonizing hardworking nurses or teachers or police officers or correctional service officers as if they are the cause of the problem. I think we forget how far we've come since 1994 in undoing the legacies of apartheid, where we then had a state which was geared only catering for 13% of the economy. Of course, the state had to expand. Governed it correctly and has done well to double the size of the police service, to increase the amount of health workers, of teachers, etc. So I think, Chair, we need to be a bit cautious around just simply complaining about the wage bill. But within it, Chair, I think there's issues that we can raise around the gap in the wage bill. It's difficult to tell a municipal worker earning 150,000 that your wage bill is too high when the DG of Treasury is only 1.6 million, for example, or the minister earning 2.2 million, for example. Whenever we spend that kind of contradiction. Though we must agree that government has managed to reduce the wage bill significantly, and in fact, if it's 13-1 in the public service, in the private sector, it's about 30-1. So we really want to see the private sector coming and playing its part. Chair, I think we must say we are happy with the government's efforts to keep social expenditure at an above inflation level, and we appreciate that significant response. I think, Chair, lastly on this part, there's been much said about revenue increases. We really were opposed to the tax income increases this year. We felt it was squeezing lower income and middle income families too much. We were opposed to that we've had ESCOM year after year having increases which are double inflation or even triple or quadruple inflation. Yet workers' wages increases have not kept up with that. They've averaged 6%. And in this same spirit, Chair, we would be strongly opposed to any increase in the VAT next year, because again, we're hitting the poor, the working class, the middle class more than they can afford. I would rather see an increase in luxury taxes and also a reduce in wasteful expenditure, etc. I know, Chair, that we don't want to just complain as COSATU, we also want to come up with proposals, and we would want to see Treasury consider seriously with our MPs ways of looking at increasing their taxes on luxury goods, dealing with companies which ignore the zero rating of essential goods like brown bread. We would support a wealth or solidarity tax amongst your millionaire earners. I think, Chair, we'd also want to see incentives being provided to encourage the private sector to reinvest in the economy. I think, Chair, we'd want to see all government departments adhering to Treasury's requirements and DTI's requirements around local procurement, to see how can this sector expand it significantly as a way of stimulating local economic development. I think, Chair, we also feel that company taxes have been reduced without seeing a reciprocal response from business towards creating jobs or towards reinvesting in the economy. I think lastly, Chair, we'd also want to see beneficiation be pursued with more urgency by the private sector and pushed by government. Chair, look, in terms of the United, this thing of political acronyms can confuse one at times. There's too many these days. There was once a party called the UIF, which disappeared a few years ago. In terms of the Unemployment Insurance Fund, look, I think we must express frustration there, Chair, that there was a very good UIF bill which left it like 2 years ago, sponsored by the Department of Labor. It was going to expand UIF access significantly. from benefits from 8 months to 12 months, expand maternity leave benefits, target domestic workers to ensure that they receive maternity leave, and it's taken the Department of Labor 2 years to bring that bill to Parliament. At the same time, Treasury has correctly raised frustration that we have a surplus sitting in the UAF, unused. We're really sure that could have been addressed progressively if our competent departments show the urgency of fast-tracking legislation. I think, Chair, on the last issue around revenues, politically, COSATU has been raising the issue of the lack of democracy in Swaziland for a very long time. And we know the Swaziland budget depends upon SACA revenues, and surely there we can put political pressure on the kingdom to embrace the virtues of democracy in the 21st century. I think lastly, Chair, we'd want to really see government cracking down even harder around tax evasion, especially amongst the high-income earners. Chair, I think some of these issues I've already covered. But again, maybe just on the issue of wasteful expenditure and so on, I think we really want to encourage Treasury to pursue with extra vigor the issue of the central procurement processes as a way of reducing wasteful expenditure, a way of reducing corruption. Or we've heard positive noise or potential noise that, for example, if textbooks are done centrally to this new procurement process, we might be able to reduce wasteful expenditure by 90% in that regard. I think we don't really want to see government being creative on how to reduce expenditure being wasted and even in free up expenditure on more useful issues. Another area, Chair, we'd want to encourage our MPs and our departments is around the ghost employees. I think our Premier of the Northwest Province, Mahamo Pelo, about a month ago mentioned there's about 36,000 ghost employees that they have uncovered in the Northwest Province. Now, even if that is correct, and if you even just multiply it by four across the nine provinces and the 273 municipalities, really, we would address the issue of the wage bill one time. We'll save up billions of rands for expenditure. I think last issue on this part. I think really our departments at a provincial level and municipal level must really come to the party. Treasury has issued many good notices about how to reduce wasteful expenditure. Yet you see time and time again full-color adverts of various beautiful mayors, of municipalities, of MECs. Why they must put the pictures there, why they must be color adverts, one doesn't know. You see a lot of money being wasted on Razzmatazz events, so to speak. I think, Chair, it was shocking to see in the medium-term statement that in the nine provincial administrations, there was about 6 billion rand surpluses. And surely that must be a sin in this time of fiscal constraint and unemployment. We know Treasury's hands are a little bit tied, they are not magicians, but I think politically those provinces must really be held to account. I think, Chair, we do support government's efforts to drive the economy in terms of expanding ocean economy, economic growth. We see some good work being done there, but again, more can be done. Again, Chair, I think we really want to raise red flags, alarm bells around the issue of shale gas and hydraulic fracking, more so given our water scarcity. I think we'd want to see more efforts being given to support emerging farmers, more so when you consider that about a third of the land restitution processes have failed because of a lack of support to new farmers. I think we'd want to see more efforts being done to support the Department of Rural Development in terms of the land restitution program, because at this stage, according to their figures, it'll take about 30 years to address all the land restitution cases. I think lastly, on the issue of agriculture, we have a really strong strategic economic sector in the agricultural sector, but we expect it to compete against the United States, against the EU, where agriculture is heavily subsidized. And of course, that can be a level playing field. I think we'd want to find more ways to support agriculture as a strategic sector, but of course, then the condition must be that the farmers treat the farm workers decently, and that the farm workers enjoy all the human rights, labor rights, land equity, housing, etc. I think, Chair, but I've mentioned the other issues already. Chair, I know some of these issues are not purely within the Appropriations Committee's forte, but because of the overlap, and I think it would be remiss if I didn't mention some of them. Chair, the reason why COSATU has raised strong concerns around the employment tax incentives was that we felt it was going to displace older workers, that employers would say, well, let me fire the old worker because I'm getting a subsidy for a young worker. And we've raised concerns about that because staff have no monitoring capacity because of tax confidentiality laws to monitor that. And we're really hoping that when we review it next year, that Cassandra's strong concerns around it will be raised and heard by Treasury, but also that Comrade Chair, that the majority of the claimants for the employment subsidies have been labour brokers, which again is a huge political defeat for us because we've raised the issue of the horrendous labour conditions that workers have under labour brokers, and yet here they are enjoying the full subsidies. I think, Chair, we will strongly support government on its job creation efforts. We've seen a lot of good work done by DTI in particular around the motor manufacturing sector, around the textile sector, around efforts to support agriculture and tourism. And we really want to see some of those fantastic success stories by DTI be expanded across all departments. We're hoping that the tourism regulations reviews will help to address the concerns there. But again, we're not fully sure that it will go the full length because they've only dealt with the countries where there are no South African embassies. So in terms of the expanded public works and community works programs, look, we're sensitive to government's desperation to create jobs, and we would support that. And we're sensitive to the need to create jobs for the long-term unemployed. Our concern around these two programs has been that we've seen provincial departments, municipalities abusing it as a form of cheap labour in effect. So if you have a cash sub municipality in rural KZN, they then outsource some of the permanent decent work, such as cleaning streets, paving roads, fixing lights, to these EPWP or CWP programs. So what is normally a permanent decent job with a pension, with a medical aid, now shifted out to a 67 rand a day job. And we've seen abuses there, Chair, that some of these subcontractors end up paying the workers with food parcels instead of paying them in wages. Some of them even ignore the ministerial sector or minimum wage. And look, we appreciate the Department of Public Works has made a lot of efforts to try to address those challenges. But again, Chair, I think we're really strongly concerned that it's become a way of cutting back municipal jobs and outsource this cheap work. On the other hand, Chair, we do strongly support government's efforts to create 15,000 plumbers or artisans to do the water leaks. We think those are the kind of programs which will help stimulate the economy. Chair, I think maybe also just to give colleagues, members, a short report on the negotiations at NEDLAC around the national minimum wage. I think we must appreciate government's efforts and the President's and the Deputy President's strong support to achieve this national minimum wage. We think this might help to finally break the apartheid wage gap once and for all. I know there's a lot of doomsayers around it, but for us, looking at international experiences in Brazil, Germany, the US, we've seen that if you increase the minimum wage to a decent level, it helps to put food on people's tables, helps to stimulate local economic growth. Chair, of course, we're also engaging with government and business at NEDLAC around finding ways to ensure greater stability in the labour market, because of course, Chair, workers don't benefit from protracted instability or long strikes. We lose wages, so we also want to see a stable environment and see how can we address the bargaining blockages. Chair, I think in terms of issue of health and social protection, I think we must commend government on the huge achievements we've made in terms of rolling out ARVs, in terms of increasing life expectancy quickly in a very short space of time. I think, Chair, there was even a recent stat about how mother-to-child transmission has fallen drastically from about 30% to, I think, about 1.5%, if my stats are correct. And I think, Chair, we can never really see what massive achievements these are by our government in a very short space of time. And really, we must strongly commend government. We're looking forward to seeing the NHI white paper being released soon and to see how we engage to make it a success. I think, Chair, we must also commend government around the achievements of social grants rollouts. I think it's about almost 17 million now recipients. Of course, this is a short-term intervention. The long-term solution is job creation. But I share, we must also raise our concerns that the increases that social grants recipients receive, we feel, are below inflation. And of course, it's the lower income earners are hit by inflation much harder in terms of electricity increases, food increases, petrol increases, etc. Chair, I think we would want to plead for government to finally release the comprehensive social security discussion paper. We've been making this plea for about 15 years. We are heartened that the ANC-NGC resolution mandated government to release it by the end of this year. We're hoping that it will happen at long last. In terms of education, look, I don't think there's too much more we can add to this. I think the committee is fully aware of the crisis in schools. We are hopeful that the department's target, revised target of eradicating mud schools will finally be released. But again, Chair, we've seen that target being revised too many times. It's still quite shocking to read on a daily basis or weekly basis about schools in the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, even Gauteng, lacking basic sanitation. There was a school in it last week, sorry, I forgot the name of the school, Jefferson, in Limpopo, where the caretaker fell into the toilet and was stuck there for an hour. And he was lucky not to have drowned. So I think in a country where we could deliver a successful World Cup, surely we can deliver toilets to all schools. We can deliver textbooks to all schools. I think, Chair, even the issue of safety and security, you have kids and teachers who are afraid to go to school in the Cape Flats in Cape Town because of the level of gangsterism causing havoc there. Chair, I think we don't need to mention too much about higher education, but again, to, I think, commend the students for forcing all of us to wake up. I think this should happen more often. It's a bit of a shame that on all of us, government, labor, all of us, business, that has taken the students, bringing us to a standstill to achieve what we all have been calling for many years. But I think we must also appreciate the President's intervention quickly to bring about the 0% fee increase. But I think, Chair, now the challenge is obviously now that the 2 billion rand has been found, and we appreciate that, now how to take it to the next step of free tertiary education. I think, Chair, we must caution that the existing means test of about 122,000 rand to qualify for NSFAS, it really leaves too many working class and middle class families out of it. If the family has two earners for only 65,000 rand, they won't qualify for NSFAS, for example. And of course, you don't pay income tax until you're earning above 65,000. So really, there are many, many families who would be worthy of it, would need it, and can't afford to pay the 60,000 rand university fees at UCT, for example. Chair, I know government has been looking at the issue of receipt of surpluses, and I think we'd want to share government's concern that it really is a sin to have these 5 billion surpluses in the CITES. But again, the solution is not to cancel there, but rather to force CITES to deliver on the mandate to train workers with industrial skills, which will help stimulate the economy. Chair, I think we do appreciate government's efforts to significantly expand rail infrastructure. We're hoping this, again, will help to move the economy forward in terms of taking freight off the roads, getting more commuters on the road, on the rails. But again, Chair, we were shocked to see the Spanish train debacle, that our trains are too high for our rails and it can only be used in a fraction of our rails. And really, government has also cracked the whip on the parastatals. It's absolutely shocking that government's putting billions of taxpayers' rands here, and our officials are gauging as, I don't know how you can say it, they're making a joke of all of us. But we really want to see government reining in the peristatals. And in fact, on this note, we're looking forward to the state-owned enterprise bill coming to Parliament as soon as possible to try to deal with this kind of gross abuses. And even just, Chair, I mean, we talk about the wage bill, but you see CEOs earning triple what the President earns, the CEO of Eskom earning 12 billion rand. These are publicly funded institutions. Surely a million rands is enough, or 1.5 million. Why must it be 12 million? Yet the same parastatals are retrenching workers. The post office paid their workers half on the Friday, half on the Wednesday this month. SAA is threatening to retrench 792 workers. Telkom rules basically by outsourcing, creating a dual wage economy in Telkom. Chair, I think it is a water infrastructure. Look, I think we're glad that the crisis is coming to a fall now, because it's been building for a long time, and hopefully when there's a crisis, governments and all of us will wake up and deal with the issue. We're hoping the water leaks program will help to address it. But again, Chair, we're worried that too many municipalities are allowed to sleep on their job and not to deal with the need to invest in the infrastructure. And we're worried, Chair, that you're going to find an ESCOM scenario where municipalities, when they wake up to the infrastructure backlog, they're going to massively increase water tariffs and expect the poor to burden the brunt of it. We do support government energy interventions. We're glad to see it's, I think, now 3 months of load shedding free, and we must commend government for good work. But again, Chair, I think if we can leave our members with a clear message today, we would really want to say, COSATU, we oppose nuclear energy completely. It's old technology. It's extremely expensive. It takes very long to build. It has huge risks in terms of health and to the environment. And given the state of renewable energy technology available out there, at a cheap price, very quick to install, with no risks, we really feel nuclear energy is not the way to go. The price tag we've seen floating around in the media are 500 billion, a billion, 1.5 billion, whatever the cost is, it will kill our budgetary efforts. We feel it's complete madness, Chairperson. I can put as blunt as that. And I think you'll forgive my language, Chair, but triggers like blunt language. So we'll plead with our members, please, let's avoid this nuclear route. It's going to cause a huge burden for all of our future generations. I think Jeff already mentioned the issue of ESCOM's continuous above inflation tariff increases. I mentioned the post office. I think, Chair, look, for us, again, without being a broken record player, we're opposed to e-tolls. We think it's been a political failure. Our understanding that the payment rates are hovering between 20% and 40%. We view it as a form of privatization of a public good, which in fact was built by public funds over many years. We would not want to see it being expanded anymore to any provinces. But in fact, we would want to encourage government to accept that it's dead and let it move on. I think we'd want to appreciate the brave stances by our ANC allies in Gauteng and KZN, saying we must find alternative ways to fund our road maintenance programs, such as the fuel levy, etc. I think, Chair, also we were opposed to it because we felt there's a lack of safe, accessible alternative public transport, especially to the working class areas. I think, Chair, I mentioned the other peristatals. Chair, look, I think we must commend the asset forfeiture unit in terms of its successes around seizing ill-gotten goods. We must commend government's efforts to capacitate the police service. But I think, Chair, the 1 million rand allocated to the SAPS Children's Bursary Fund for the children of foreign police officers, it's a token. It can really be much, much more, given the sacrifices that parents made to the police officers who have passed away. I think, Chair, we'd want to see more effort being done to deal with the backlog of the judicial, in the court and the correctional services. Chair, I think I've mentioned this already, but I think we'd want to really support government's efforts, treasury efforts, to make tenders much more transparent, to ensure payments are made within 30 days to businesses. And I think we really want to plead with government departments to follow treasury's calls in this regard. Chair, we also wanted to praise treasury at times, Chair, to show that COSATU, we don't just demonize treasury. We demonize them when we feel it's correct, but also we must appreciate the efforts. I think, Chair, in conclusion, we really want to say, for us, the number one priority is a 34% unemployment crisis, and that really must guide all government efforts, from national to municipal. If we can't do that, everything else we do will collapse. If you can solve unemployment, all the other issues will be solved by themselves. I think, Chair, really we would want to see more efforts around job creation. If you look at the good examples of GTI, especially in the industrial manufacturing sectors, I think, Chair, we're not convinced that now is the time to too quickly reduce expenditure. We still need stimulus, especially in key economic sectors. We would strongly oppose any VAT increase because of the impact upon the poor and the economy, but we would strongly support progressive tax reform as a way of getting more revenues into government. Again, Chair, we'd want this nuclear idea to be ended. The 200 million rand set aside for investigation, it could have been spent on creating renewable energy, which we've seen excellent work being done. If you look at the stats, I think renewable energy has created about 20,000 jobs so far, and those are fantastic stats. And they're quick to do, it's a win-win situation. I think, Chair, we'd want to urge government and treasury to even be more bold around cracking down on wasteful expenditure. We're convinced there's still much more fat around many departments that you can squeeze out of them. I mean, I think it would even be good, for example, Comrade Chair, if the ministers followed the example of Comrade Pravin Gordhan a few years ago, when he didn't buy a car for 1.2 million as he was entitled to, but bought one for 500,000, which is still a luxury car. But we appreciate the effort of sending a good message to the public about government is listening to their frustrations. I think she would also want government relief to prioritize at all levels, and we're glad to see the presidency asking the Department of Defense to explain this presidential jet. I think, Chair, if we don't take into account public concerns and take the public into our trust, we might find the student protests increasing tenfold across the sector, and no one will be able to control it. I think, Chair, we really want to review the employment tax incentives. The President in the January 8th statement this year mentioned that governments must phase out outsourcing in departments, must end labour broking in government, but yet too often we still see this happening across the board. In Telecom, even in Parliament, you find it, in too many departments. We're glad to see the students in the whole branches at this UCT, UJ, making progress around outsourcing coming to an end, but I think all of us need to end it. Again, Chair, we're opposed to privatizing strategic state assets. Of course, Chair, we can't end without, again, appreciating government's efforts to around health, around education, around developmental achievements, around infrastructure. Those really have been fantastic achievements, and we really want to support them. Chair, but again, I think we feel there's more needed effort around economic stimulus. And Chair, I think also we want to find a better way, or more meaningful way, rather, of how do we engage with Treasury around the budget processes, not just once a year. We come and give our statements and change the response and off we go when we meet each other again a year later. But yes, that is the Chair. Sorry if I took too long. Thanks for indulging us, and yes, we're available for any questions, Chairperson. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Matthew. I will... No additions. You are only... Hello? Okay. You are... Okay, so there are no additions from anybody. Honorable members, your comments? Is it straightforward? Is it clear? Since the committee is happy with your submission, nobody wants to say anything? Or you're still absorbing it? Too hot. Honorable Fit?
Maybe just one question, because it's obviously on the minds of a lot of South Africans that care, is the issue of the jet that we believe is going to be purchased now. One of the members or the CEO of OMSCO was interviewed this morning, and he denied, he said that purchase or the intent to purchase or lease, whatever, is still at a very early stage. So maybe I could just ask is where, you know, how reliable is the source of Kusatu with regards to that information? Thanks.
Yes, thanks. I must say, Comrade Chair, I'm alone because Kusatu has also been going through fiscal adjustments for the past year, so we've also been reducing our own excessive expenditure. So we can appreciate government cutting the fat. We've also been cutting the fat for the past year, which is a good thing. Chair, our source on the presidential chair is a very easy source. It's the Department of Defense. It's not a new thing. This debate has been, I think, there for even when Comrade Sisulu was Minister of Defense. It's been there for the past 2, 3, even 4 years. And look, we understand the rationale that the president, you can't expect the president to take a minibus. We understand the issue that there are not easy connected flights across Africa where our foreign affairs priority is. But again, I think our point is, well, one is, well, two points. One is that politically we're sensitive to the current climate. If government was struggling to find 2 billion rand to address the correct demand of students for 0% increase of fees, how would we be able to afford 2 billion, 4 billion, whatever the figure is for a presidential jet? Even if 1 billion, too much. I think that's the one. I think other issues that, what are our priorities today? And I think we really need to be sensitive to that, because there is also why we hopped on a bit about the nuclear energy. The public needs to feel the government is sensitive to the priorities. It's difficult to tell someone in Malawi camp or in Guguletu or Kailicha who doesn't have a decent toilet why we need a fancy jet. Not that we doubt that the president does need a jet at some stage, but not right now. And when it happens, there should be transparent. Let's engage. Let's open up to the public. And if the argument has merit, it will still on its merit. But I think, Chair, we must also appreciate the deputy president's efforts. Not that we want to be populist, but I think when the deputy president, Kumar Ramaphosa, went to Cuba in December on our personal holiday, he flew commercial airlines. He paid for it by himself. And we appreciate that kind of sense of humility of leadership. And I think we even saw that recently he flew to Sweden, to Cuba, to Mexico, commercial airlines. And I think look, you know, those are always practical. If you're flying to Djibouti, there may not be connecting flights. We appreciate that. But I think we appreciate government leaders who also show sensitivity to frustration of the public about wasteful expenditure or about prioritizing, etc. But I must say, Comrade Chair, the comments that I'm concluding, the comments by the CEO of Arms Corps referring to media articles as trash, they don't help us because the public is correct. Even the public is misinformed. The public is correct to raise concerns about expenditure, more so excessive expenditure, more so to raise concerns with the corruption, whatever. And I think we must appreciate that the public has voted for us, all parties. The public has given us a mandate to govern, and that we must appreciate the taxpayers. And you know that there's always this argument that workers don't pay taxes, which is a false notion. Workers pay VAT. They pay income tax, they pay electricity taxes. All these taxes belong to the masses who put us in government. And I think at all times we must appreciate, even if they're wrong, it's fine, but we must appreciate the public concerns. So, and that is why we're just mentioning as an example of the need for government to prioritize and to listen. Thanks, Commissioner.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chair. I'd like Mr. Matthews to comment. In many ways, he reaffirms the state, the assertive role of the state in economic transformation. I think in many ways he said that the state must take an active role in addressing economic transformation. But also you have pointed out to the alarming feature of 34% of unemployment, that it needs drastic measures. I just want to benefit, Chair, as COSATU is part of the NetLeg stakeholders that facilitate more areas of consensus in how we proceed in dealing with this catch of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. Does COSATU agree with the current areas identified as growth areas in the medium and long term? Because, well, I take note of your issue on nuclear energy and progress on social wage bill. But do you agree in the fundamentals, or there are areas that you totally disagree in that constitute the fundamentals of taking us in the medium and long term of growth? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The clarity I seek is on the issue of solidarity tax. I understand the wealth tax. That solidarity tax, is it something similar to what was once called Umsobo Mvu Fund, or is something totally different? I just seek that clarity. But the second thing is, you made the reference to the to the subsidies that countries in the EU, the US, and Japan allow to their agricultural sector, as an example. And of course, we know that there's a whole lot of protectionist tendencies, which in many instances go against the WTO rules. Now, last week there was a comment in the in the, I think it was in the Business Day, that South Africa tends to stick to the EU rules to the letter. When the other well-to-do countries can undermine these rules. And in many instances, we stick to these WTO rules at our detriment, especially in the face of the global and domestic economic climate. Would COSA too be of the view that there are certain things that government, perhaps, and labor, and the private sector need to tease out in that respect and see how far we can deal with those issues and still be able to stimulate economic growth without without really reviewing our position in some of the instances that relate to the WTO rules, in the same way as these other big economies are doing. Because it doesn't make sense that you would sit in the same multilateral institution, adopt the rules, go out and undermine those rules, and nothing happens to you. Those who do continue to suffer. And yet these countries remain our major trading partners. Thanks.
Let me allow Matthew to respond to those two comments.
Well, thanks very much, Chair, to the members for the very, very important question. Look, I think the last question, I think the members raised very, very important issues. And look, we accept realpolitik, that South Africa is at best a medium-sized economy, and we're dealing with the U.S., the EU, they don't really need us to a large extent. We're in a very unequal balance of power there. So I think, so we must really commend DTI, especially Minister of DTI, Rob Davies, for really doing excellent work in terms of protecting local industries. If, for example, this recent debate in the media around AGOA, I think the government has gone to excellent efforts to protect the poultry industry. Pressure is good, Chairperson. It's good. Everybody's put pressure, and pressure helps to fight solutions.
Well, we have concerns to hear, so talk to the workers.
So, pressure makes society go forward. Yeah, they look at. Look, I think DTI has done a good job trying to get the right balance. I know we're in a hell of a difficult spot with the U.S., for example, around the meat exports to South Africa. I think DTI, the nice thing about it is that they've been engaging business, they've been engaging labor, and trying to find the right balance between our needs and the reality of the world's trade regulations. But I think I think the member is 100% correct that we are forced, because of our size, to abase, according to the rules, 110%. And then the EU gets away with flouting it. I think, Chair, one, why I mentioned ETL is because I think they've gone to real good efforts to engage labor, business, to find solutions. And I can mention one good example, Chair. Kosatu's textile affiliates, SAFTU, textile and clothing workers. Because in the 90s we felt that really we were too militant at adhering to the WTO rules and moving too fast towards opening our economy, and that caused our textile industry to bleed massively. We lost hundreds of thousands of jobs. SAFTU's done a good job, Chair. So they're coming back for a second bite. SAFTU set up a good program called the Chair where they monitor all government tenders. They then feed that information in to different industries, different companies within the textile industry as a way of helping companies access tenders, which then helps to create jobs, etc., etc. So kind of a tripartite alliance, so to speak. And I think this has really helped to stabilize the textile industry, keep businesses afloat, but also keep jobs. I think we've also seen good efforts by governments, for example, going to Fushimi, going to Woolworths, and encouraging them to procure locally. And I think we've seen in response some good efforts by those companies where they, even if they pay a higher price to local companies, it's just a way of getting them off the ground, keeping them afloat. So I think that's the kind of spirit we really want to see at all levels of government. And I think, Honourable Chair, that you can even go further. There's no reason why government departments, when they do catering, they don't target township caterers or target young companies to provide these things, as opposed to the more established companies. But I think also lastly, on this question, I think there's a need for government departments to ensure that when they procure stuff, it's locally produced. We certainly still find cheap imports flooding the economy. And maybe for the benefit of members, is that there's a new border management agency being created by the Department of Home Affairs, and one of our key concerns, which we're going to engage the Department of Home Affairs and Treasury at NEDLAC next week on, is that what will this do to the capacity of customs to enforce, to protect our economy when it comes to inspecting customs for imports coming to our borders, making sure they're not illegal imports, cheap imports flooding the economy, etc. Because you really find, for example, the textile industry, how Chinese T-shirts were able to kill our sector in that regard. I think to the other honourable member's question, look, we support government's 9-point plan. We're supporting that. We believe those are key issues in terms of where we can create jobs, agriculture, industrial, manufacturing, textiles, infrastructure development, renewable energy. We think really, again, if government invests there, if government engages business, engages labor, all of us sit together, we really can find ways to help each other to meet all our different requirements. We also don't want just to see government pumping in money and just being wasted. But I think, Chair, look, we do support government on that issue. I think our concern, Chair, is that not all departments seem to treat this unemployment crisis with a sense of urgency it deserves, all provincial departments. And I think if one can conclude, the fact that we have 6 billion rand surplus in the 9 provincial administrations, it really does show that some of our officials are not seized with the urgency that this deserves. So that 6 billion rand, really, I'm sure could have created more than 10 jobs, you know? There could have been 10 families sort of taken care of. Thanks, Commissioner.
Okay, National Treasury, any comments on COSATU? Or just noted?
Chair, I think we note the very comprehensive presentation from Kosatu. We do engage around these issues, and I think we take all of the comments from a wide variety of stakeholders into account, and particularly the comments from Parliament when we compile the budget. I think that Kosatu is presented on such a wide range of things, it wouldn't be helpful to comment on any particular one, but we take all account of all of it.
Honourable members, any more comments on COSATU, or is that fine? Okay, thank you. We appreciate your input. We'll take it into account when we make our report. Thank you very much. We have the honorable members, the other submissions we received are written submissions which we will consider for oral presentation. We have only three. Rural Health Advocacy Projects, are they here? Yes, we give you the floor. Let me just indicate to members that we do have a written submission from Human Rights and Democracy of South Africa. We have Tswane North TVET, written submission. Three people from TVET. And then we have Public Service Accountability Monitor, and then SALGA. But for now, we'll take Rural Health Advocacy Project. You have the floor.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd just like to apologize to the committee members for not having a copy of the presentation for you. We'll make sure that each of you do receive a copy of the presentation within the day for your consideration report. You do have a copy of our written submission, which contains all the information contained here. With me are colleagues that have provided input into this presentation. My first colleague is Dr. Desmond Kihokiwe, who's a leader within the Rural Doctors Association of Southern Africa, as well as a rural health practitioner at Khanyisa Hospital in the Northwest. Sasha Stevenson's an attorney at Section 27, amongst the group of troublemakers in a good way, and then our director, Mariah Sister Kojanaka, who's the director of the Rural Health Advocacy Project. We're going to be talking today about a very specific issue that's arising out of what is essentially a budget issue. So we're going to be talking to you today about the causes and consequences of freezing of posts. And when we're talking about freezing of posts, we're speaking about critical healthcare worker posts, critical support staff posts, and in some instances, critical administrative posts, as they relate specifically to healthcare. But this idea of staffing moratoria, I think, is one widespread throughout the public service at the moment in times of austerity. So just briefly to go through our presentation for this morning, I'm going to briefly talk to you about the background to the systemic causes of frozen posts and staffing moratoria. I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. I'm sure most of you are well aware of what the causes of these moratoria are. The second point, Desmond will talk to that. And from his experience as a rural health practitioner, but also as a leader within a movement of rural doctors and an association of rural health practitioners, how this process of placing moratoria and freezing of posts, what sort of consequences, real world consequences, we're experiencing, particularly in underserved areas. Sasha will then speak briefly to the obligations of the states with regard to critical posts as they relate to specifically to healthcare, and then we'll present a few recommendations from a meeting we had, a roundtable discussion with representatives from district health in several provinces, provincial treasuries, provincial departments of health, and some discussion with National Treasury. So just briefly, what's happening, what we're seeing at the moment being implemented and this year, towards the end of this year, we're finding that it's happening in most provinces, including the province that we're in now, the Western Cape. We're finding two versions of staffing moratoria or freezing of posts. The one is official moratoria where memorandums or instructions are sent around to financial managers within departments of health at the provincial level that they can no longer fill vacant posts. And very often these are posts that were at one point funded, but now because of various reasons are unfunded and cannot be filled for a given period of time. Unofficial moratoria, this is simply where provincial departments delay the appointments of staff into positions. We've seen several instances where it's taken up to 6 months to finalise an appointment, and by that time, particularly in the case of doctors who are highly mobile professionals, they have either moved into the private sector, another province, and in the worst case scenario, overseas. And then other consequences that we'll briefly touch on. We've seen the centralization of HR functions, so added inefficiencies within the system in terms of the employment and management of staff, and this is not just healthcare workers, it's also critical support staff, and it's quite important for us to recognize that you know, the so-called low-level workers are absolutely critical to the functioning of health facilities and the provision of care. And then something, and this is the reason why we're here today and talking to appropriations and your role as oversight around budgetary issues, is Treasury's involvement in the implementation of moratoria. And very often Treasury's involvement is at best so-called co-management in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, where they co-authorise expenditure. At worst, it's a total takeover of particular functions around expenditure within provincial departments of health, where it's up to Treasury to decide on where posts can be filled if there's somebody available. And that's really kind of the crux of what we're getting to today is that kind of relationship between the budget, Treasury as the authority around the budget, and control going forward. Should I continue?